back into the slot. Sandy Harf is on it and they score. Cornell has increased the lead to two.
Malott shooting, he scores.
Here's Caldas, a shot, score! Yanni Caldas!
O'Neal, Dullemeyer, stop, shoots, and scores! Tristan O'Neal!
As Vanderlyn drives the front, shooting, he scores!
Good evening, hockey fans, and welcome to episode 12 of the Good Evening Hockey Fans podcast. My name is Zach Silver, senior writer on the Cornell Daily Sun, and today I'm joined by assistant sports editor Christina Bulkley, fellow Sun senior writer Dylan McDevitt, and Sun sports editor Rafi Genler, the four hockey beat writers here on the Sun. We're here to break down a pretty interesting Cornell hockey weekend and preview what will be another interesting Cornell hockey weekend. So
four beat writers, that's a little excessive, isn't it?
Yeah, I think we have too many.
I think it's a good number for this worthwhile hockey team.
Should we vote Zach off the island?
I'll take my recorder with me. Kiss this podcast goodbye.
We need him to drive us to the rink.
Yes. Yeah, I'm too valuable. If anything, that's why I stick around so long. But anyway, we're here to talk about some Cornell hockey. I think let's start off by just going around the room. Or let me recap real quick. So both the men and the women were in action this past weekend. The women in the national semifinal against Minnesota. Their first trip to the Frozen Four since 2012. Ended up taking a 2-0 loss in that game. Really a 1-0 loss, but an empty netter in the last 30 seconds. Gave the Golden Gophers a 2-0 win. So, you know, a great season for the women that we'll talk about a little bit later, and definitely nothing to hold their heads down about this year. And as for the men, they went up to Lake Placid and won the first semifinal game against Brown, 6-0, to move into the finals, where you heard us talk about that in the last episode, a little 10-minute episode on the Good Evening Hockey Fans podcast from the bowels of Herb Brooks Arena. And then on Saturday night, they have a bit of an interesting game against Clarkson, tied up at 2-2 late, in a game that already saw Jeff Malott season end, and it saw a couple power play goals in favor of Clarkson to bring the game to 2-1 at the early onset. Tristan Mullen ties it late, and then in overtime, a little bit of some funny antics with the goal behind Galida leaves him injured. Austin McGrath comes into the game, and Clarkson proceeds to score the game winner in overtime. So let's just start off.
Well, and you didn't even mention perhaps controversy number one, which is that the winning goal was offside.
Right. Well, I'm sure. Let's start there. Good segue, Rafi.
Well, it wasn't really offside. It sort of was offside. There was an interesting play where the puck goes into the zone and kicks off a Clarkson player's skate as he was leaving the zone. The puck goes back out of the zone and goes back in the zone. Clarkson enters legally, goes up and scores.
Right, so they couldn't review it.
And so the rule is, when they went to review, you can only review back up to the most recent puck entry. And since the most recent puck entry up to that point, it was a legal entry by Clarkson. Basically, it's this bang-bang play where the official should have seen the blatant offsides, blown the play dead, and put a face-off in the neutral zone. What ends up happening is they miss the call, and then Clarkson is able to reset, get back on sides, enter the zone legally, and earn the game-winning goal.
Chris Clack with the game-winner, backdoor on the graph. Yeah, I mean, you heard, if you listening to the broadcast, you heard Perry Larkis and Topher Scott. Topher obviously being a Cornell hockey alumnus. In the moment, they were saying, that's offsides, play should be over. I think play-by-play guy Perry was like, and we're just going to keep on playing, I guess. And then Clarkson on that next sequence wins the game. But yeah, I mean, like you said, the not reviewable, the coaching staff, it wasn't too pleased that wasn't called, but, you know, Schaefer kind of admitted defeat in his post-game press conference, just saying it's just a weird rule that it's not reviewable, but, you know, obviously unhappy with the fact that it wasn't picked up in the first place.
Well, and he was infinitely more pissed about the Galida injury.
Rightfully so.
Understandably so. Yeah, I think we're all with him on that
there. Yeah. So to talk about that real quick. So in the a little less than 10 minutes into the first overtime period, Yanni Caldas and a Clarkson forward are skating behind the net, end up kind of making contact with the net. The net stays on its moorings but flips over puts its weight on Galida. Galida's kind of pinned in an awkward position. His skate gets caught in the side netting. Caldas and a Clarkson forward, Devin Brousseau, actually try and help Galida and get the net off of him, but play never stops. And eventually Galida gets free, kind of has to whip his leg out of the netting, ends up hurting his knee. And Schaefer said today that he's now doubtful for this coming weekend, in the first round of the NCAA tournament at Northeastern, or at in Providence against Northeastern. So yeah, what did you guys? I remember seeing that play in real time, seeing that was maybe one of the most bizarre things I've ever
really
seen.
Really strange.
Even video looking back.
It was so strange that the whistle didn't blow, especially considering just a little bit earlier in overtime. You know, this has been overlooked because it's only the eighth most ridiculous thing to happen in the game. But a Cornell scoring chance was blown dead right away when Clarkson goaltender Jake Kiley's net came undone. So it was strange. You know, there was such a quick whistle there, and then Goleta trapped under his own net and no whistle. And Schaefer was really quite irate that a failure to blow a whistle was what caused an injury.
Yeah, so he had a very impassioned post game rant about it, so I think it's due diligence to let everyone hear that in its full.
So the million-dollar question is, do I want to coach in the NCAAs or do I not want to coach in the NCAAs? And that's my goal in this press conference. So I'll answer that question very carefully. Why does the officials want to keep the net on in that situation and it cost my starting goaltender, our starting goaltender, a knee injury? For what? To keep the play going? They messed up the call and the kid got hurt. You know, for no reason. The Clarkson kid's trying to help him. You know, like, that's the kind of sportsmanship. The goalie's down on his knees. The thing's on his on the back of his neck. And yet they can't blow the whistle and it hurt a student athlete. I just think that's unacceptable from an official standpoint. And great sportsmanship. Like, our guy's trying to help him. The Clarkson kid's trying to help him. The only guys who weren't helping was the officials. They were the only ones not doing their job. I mean, the Clarkson kid wasn't great. He wasn't, doing anything. It was unfortunate. You know, we lose Maddie. It wasn't Austin's, but it was just that kind of night for us. I mean, it was just a weird play, and it's just unfathomable why they would just stop, blow the whistle, and protect everybody involved.
You asked them why?
Yeah, I asked them why. They didn't have any answer. They didn't have a good answer for anything all night long, so they wouldn't talk to anybody. I think part of their job is to communicate, and there wasn't much communication tonight.
So that was an impassioned head coach, Mike Schaefer, about what happened to Matt Goleta this past weekend up in Lake Placid. We'll talk a little bit more about this coming weekend, but...
Could there be a more fitting way for this season to go?
No. To lose Goleta there.
To lose Goleta and also have Austin McGrath leading the team.
Yeah,
it's totally not his fault. I mean, he's on the ice for less than 4 minutes before the overtime goal is scored. He's got pretty much no chance to even break a sweat. You know, you could see, and there was a little bit of a stoppage between when Goleta comes out and he goes in, and you can see him kind of get on the ice and start to, do his warm-ups and try to get loose. But in reality, it was a good play by Clarkson. The offside is what it is. I mean, as has been said by many people, Clarkson still had to score a goal, even though they were kind of given a gift of a play. And they did that, and it was a little bit of a wraparound. It kind of came on the other side, and he kind of left his back door open. Not really his fault at the end of the day. He gets put in a tough situation, I think, which, I mean, give McGrath credit. He came in earlier in the season when Goleta was down. Even in the first game when Goleta wasn't playing well, they had pulled him and put McGrath in. So he's been kind of thrown into the fire, several times this season. And give him credit that he's kind of kept his composure and for the most part played very well. So this coming weekend is another opportunity for him to kind of get in there in a big moment and try to backstop his team to a couple of wins to get to the Frozen Four.
People forget he's an All-Ivy goaltender.
He is the All-Ivy League goaltender.
First team All-Ivy. He's, by definition, the best goalie in the Ivy League.
Yes, that's what they say anyways.
And also some more bad news to come out of that game was, as I mentioned, Jeff Mellott made a collision with Clarkson forward Nico Sturm, Clarkson captain Nico Sturm in the first period. Ended up getting called for penalty on a play that Schaefer and his coaching staff just thought was an innocent collision, or harmless, or not harmless, but...
I'll admit it looked like interference to me, to be honest with you, but...
Yeah, well, that's one man's opinion.
Yeah.
Well, that's just like your opinion, man.
He made this joke over the weekend, so it's not as funny.
The Big Lebowski?
Yes, I know the Big Lebowski. We're all Big Lebowski fans here. It's a Cornell Daily Sun.
So, a lot penalized on the play... and eventually, after the game, it is made clear that he's out for the season. Schaefer said 7 to 8 months is a recovery. Tuesday, a media day, he said it would probably be more like first couple weeks of the season. He hasn't said specifically what the injury is, but It's the same thing that Brendan Smith had a couple years ago, which was an ACL tear, so we can pretty comfortably say that is an ACL problem that Milan has. He'll be having surgery soon, hoping to get back for next year. But I think you know, kind of some other stuff that happened in this game that doesn't even get talked about. There was one point where the net behind Kiley came off, and remember you and I were standing there, and it came off, and the ref was standing right there and never blew the whistle dead, which is super weird.
Correct. And not to I'm sort of changing the topic here, but the same exact thing happened in Hamden at the Frozen Four with the women when there was a sequence where the Minnesota goal came dislodged, and it stayed dislodged for about, I want to say, at least 3 or 4 minutes before the officials noticed.
Minutes, wow.
Yeah, it was a really long time, and it was honestly, in all the hockey games I've seen, perhaps the weirdest thing I've ever seen. So lots of weird things involving nets getting dislodged and goals getting scored and not scored this weekend between both between both teams this weekend. But yeah, you're right, Zach. That was an interesting sequence. I wonder, you know, I'll say this. You know, the Cornell fan base is often vocal about its disdain for ECAC officiating, and I think for the most part,
I'm with the Cornell fan base this time. It was an atrocious display.
Yes, what happened with Goleta was nothing short of, you know what?
And the offsides, the linesman is right there.
Yes, the linesman is right there. But even with the goal falling on Goleta, like, I don't know what they're thinking. Like, I brought this up off the air, but what if the goal? What if the puck crosses the goal line while the goal in the back of the net? Were they gonna call it a goal? And if they're not going to call it a goal...
If I had to guess, by the way they handled the situation, they would have called it a goal.
Right, because if they wouldn't have called it a goal, then why would they just blow the... Because
the goal hadn't actually moved.
Right, it's not off. It's not off its moorings. It had just kind of tipped over.
It had just fallen on top
of Glide's neck. So that's my question. But I think in general, you know, mostly the critiques of the ECAC officiating can be a little unfair or unfounded. But in this particular game, I have to say it was maybe one of the worst displays of ECAC officiating I've ever seen, and
it was almost funny.
It was really a comedy of errors. But I think the ECAC has some self reflection to do, because in the most important game of its entire however many games the ECAC runs.
So the four best officials in theory.
So should be the cream of your crop officials officiating a garbage game like that and giving up a game winning goal they shouldn't have given up. Letting arguably the best goaltender in the league, not that they should let anybody get hurt, but the goal falls on arguably the best goaltender in the league, injures his knee. I mean, you're talking about this great event at Lake Placid, and it's well done for the most part every year between, you know, two of the best teams in the conference perennially.
Two of the best teams in the country, maybe.
Yeah, Clarkson and Cornell, I mean, they're great rivals, obviously.
Top 5 defenses.
We can touch upon a little bit later, you know, the relationship between Casey Jones and Schaefer, and, you know, it's a big-time game. And they blew it. They blew the officiating in perhaps the biggest game that they have basically put on in a couple of years. Because it was rightfully, you know, a high-build matchup between two kind of defensive heavyweights.
A lot of fans, given how close it was
lot,
to both
A lot of
bases.
Fans. I mean, this is kind of exactly what the ECAC wants in its Lake Placid event, right? Cornell,
Clarkson. When they made Lake Placid, this is basically the matchup they were hoping to get.
Right, because it's going to maximize attendance. Cornell fans travel really well. It's only 90 minutes from Potsdam. And, you know, you got what you expected. A great game in front of a great crowd, but garbage officiating kind of took away from it.
Attendance was around 5,700.
Yeah, which is pretty good.
The only place I would even think about pushing back is that on that Goleta incident, I mean, I don't know. It's hard to tell, like, what would have changed. I mean, I guess the only way it would have changed is that he wouldn't have been struggling to get out of the net. Like, play would have been over. He could have, like, sat there for a second, figured out where his skate was stuck in the net. So I understand that. But, you know, it's still kind of hard to tell. Like, I guess that is a thing where it's like he would have taken his time to make sure he got out safely instead of struggling to wiggle himself out and end up twisting his knee badly and hurting himself, where he probably won't play in an NCAA tournament game.
Yeah, I mean, it puts the goaltender, as Schaefer mentions in his quote, the student athlete, you know, in a situation where he is now basically completely on his own to figure out how to get out of this really tough situation he's in with the net on his back, and ends up injuring himself because the official couldn't be bothered to blow the play dead for whatever reason.
Yeah, I mean, it was something I've never seen in my 3-odd years covering the team and watching hockey as a fan and in other respects. So I definitely think that you know, there's got to be a little bit of a look in the mirror for ECAC officiating after that luckily for Cornell, I guess they don't have to worry about that going into this weekend at Northeastern, but or against Northeastern.
And despite all the shenanigans and all the injuries of the season, and Austin McGrath now looking like the starting goaltender, look at us. Look at this. Cornell's two wins away from the Frozen Four.
And right back where it was.
They're in Providence, and anything can happen in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah. I mean, I think we'll, unless anyone has anything else to add about Clarkson, I think we can segue to the women before we get to the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I mean, I do just want to add one thing to what you said. I agree that, you know, they should feel good about where they are. They made it to the NCAAs. You know, it's hard to do. It's the first time in Shaver's career they've done it 3 years in a row. Lots of worthwhile accomplishments there. But in my view, and I think in most people's view, you know, you play to win the ECAC championship. And, you know, the NCAAs, the quest for the national title that hasn't come in however many 40-something years, I get it that that's valuable and important. But the reality is the likelihood that they win a national championship this year is, I'm just going to manage expectations here, probably not very high. So, you know, at the end of
just statistically speaking. Yeah.
At the end of the day, you know, I think this season, I'm not sure you can really consider it a postseason success or even a success at all. Just like you couldn't really consider last season a success, set, you know, despite how well it went, because they didn't come away with any hardware. And I think that's important. Nobody cares about the Cleary Cup. I'm sorry. They don't even put the banners up.
No, of course
so,
not.
You know, I think that there's a real, I think, an understandable disappointment among the fans that the Whitelaw Cup was not achieved this year, especially after all the buildup and all they got through. They really had to work hard to get back to that championship game this year, and they fell short. Admittedly, not all their fault with the officiating like we talked about, but you are right that, you know, look at us, here we are. That's NCAAs, you know, anyways, and they should feel proud of it because it's not an easy thing to do. But at the end of the day, I think that, you know, I think this season will probably end up leaving a bad taste in people's mouths more likely than not. But who knows? I mean, it is college hockey, so anything can happen.
I mean, they are a little reassured just given, you know, kind of like you said, like it wasn't, they will look back at least this game with officiating in mind, but they know that they played well enough to win that game.
Yeah, I mean, at least they're competitive. I mean, they're not RPI, right? I mean,
well, no, not at all. But we're American International.
Well, I know.
Hey, don't you trash talk American International
won their conference. Not everybody can say
yes.
that.
Yes. Well, you know who didn't win their conference? Cornell.
On top of the bad officiating, too, though, that game just had a lot of weird things happen. Like, just, like, bad luck with when Cornell was trying to clear that one puck and it bounced off the ref to a Clarkson player, and then they scored on that play. Like, and then who was it who got pushed into the boards and it opened up and they fell down the tunnel?
That's going to be forgotten. That was, like, a few minutes before.
It was an overtime, right?
It was an overtime. I forget if it was before or after Goliath. Yeah. I think it was after Goliath got changed, maybe before. Brent Smith was skating down his boards and got checked into the door right in front of right by the Clarkson bench.
Yeah,
it swung open and he fell into the doorway.
Basically, if there was a Black Mirror episode about a college hockey game, it would have been this. It was like the college hockey game from hell, where everything possible went wrong. It was so weird.
Well, now I want to switch gears and talk about the women. We'll get back to the men in a short while, but we had one of our own covering the team this past weekend up in Hamden, Connecticut, the Frozen Four. Dylan, you were there at the game.
I was indeed.
2-0 loss to Minnesota. Why don't you start off with some takeaways from that game? I know that's not going to apply to another game this season, but and maybe your thoughts on their season as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, I was thoroughly impressed with how they played against Minnesota. You know, a really obviously top line team. They scored they averaged over 4 and change goals a season this year. Really high-powered offense, really, really disciplined defensively. And Cornell went out there, neutral ice in Hamden, and really played a very good game, kept it close. I mean, you're talking about holding the highest scoring offense in the country, a team that scores 4 and change goals a game, to just basically one
goal. Essentially
one goal. The whole game, and that's impressive. Doug DeRoe said after the game he was really proud of the way they played, and I think he's right to feel that way. Obviously, you know, you wanted to see them win and get a chance to play for the national title, but at the end of the day, I think a really, really successful season for them. You know, they got to the Frozen Four for the first time in, 6 or 7 years, and I think that's a testament to, you know, how well coached they are.
Well, he was named the National Coach of the Year.
Yes, and I think he deserves it.
Jamie Bourbonneau,
second team All American. So yeah, I think the women this year, a really great season. You know, kind of to contrast with the men a little bit, actually. You know, the women didn't win the ECAC championship game either. They lost to Clarkson just like the men did. But it feels to me like...
And in the first round of the NCAA tournament, they faced Northeastern,
go figure. No, but I think that... I think for the women, I think fans should feel better about their season because of how far they came. You know, last year they didn't even make the NCAA tournament and they were the first team out. And this year they're, you know, knocking off Northeastern in the quarterfinal, getting to the Frozen Four, playing really well against Minnesota, the eventual national runner-up. And,
No, I'm just messing with you, sorry. What are you doing? I don't know. Keep going. I got distracted.
Anyways, yeah, I all told a really good season for them. I'm glad I went. It was a good experience to go there for the Frozen Four. And yeah, I think it's hard to have many bad things to say about their season this year, especially considering they had a real rough patch, you know, in the early part of the season when their coach and a few of their star players were out gallivanting with Team Canada. Mm-hmm. They had a few ties and losses that were not so great, but give them credit, they stayed disciplined at the back end of the year, earned the number one seed in the conference, made it to the conference championship game, made it to the Frozen Four. You know, really not a whole lot you can say negatively about their season, other than maybe they should have won the ECAC championship. But
and then, you know, the most reassuring thing is just how few seniors they graduate from this team. Only four in Pippi Gerais, Diana Buckley and Lenka Serger, and also Marlene Annette, which, you know, she's an important piece to this team. I'm not saying the other three aren't. Also, you know, I mean, Diana Buckley's pass on that Gilles Frechette winner in Northeastern, I still drool over every single day. But, you know, these are... I don't want to say replaceable, but, you know, it's only four at the end of the day. And you still have Maddie Mills, Kristen O'Neill, Jamie Bourbonneau, Micah Zandy Hart, even Gilles Frechette.
Lindsey Browning and Nett, who is her perfectly serviceable goaltender.
Right, yeah. I mean, you have, you know, skaters who are coming back who are still key. And even in Nett, you know, losing Marlene is definitely tough to see. But you have Lindsey who came in and was in relief during the ECAC semifinals and finals. You know, the most important, well, I guess not most important. This at that point in the season, the most important time of her year.
And really played well.
Won them the semifinal, and you know didn't play poorly in the finals, which just Cornell couldn't quite solve it the other way. But yeah, no, it was a really really successful season. I had a ton of fun going to some of their games, especially later half.
Their playoff games. You know, I mean, they're like I said earlier, they are very well coached. It's a very strong program. They got a lot of talent, and you know, I think they pretty much maximized their potential this season, which is something that in hockey is really hard to do. You know, you see a lot of teams every year, in both men and women's hockey teams, saying, you know, oh, you know, we were really talented, but we had injuries or this or that. You know, we had struggles and we just couldn't reach our potential. And I think you can't really say that. I think
they... See, Cornell men's hockey.
I think they really maximized their potential this year. And, you know, I think you can only go up from here. Yeah.
Well, it'll be interesting to see next season. The Frozen Four is going to be maybe an expectation instead of an aspiration.
What's funny is that I remember we were taping...
And we'll see how they respond to that.
We were taping one of the very first episodes of this show last semester, and we were talking about the women, and I don't remember exactly what you said, but you said something to the tune of, you know, let's see if this team can be the Frozen Four team. Some people think it can be, and it turned out
that they played
really well enough to get to that point, and I think they deserve a lot of credit.
Yeah, I'm just looking up when the future dates and sites of the Frozen Women's Frozen Four. Ah, here they are. This year was in Hamden. Next year will be Hamden. Next year will be at Agganis, Agnes Arena.
Agganis.
Okay.
BU.
Thank you. It'll be hosted by BU.
Why is this relevant?
I was just curious. I was curious. The year after that will be in Erie, Pennsylvania, at Mercyhurst.
Wow. Oh, Erie, PA. We got to make it a road trip.
Is that far?
It's just not very interesting.
It's a very isolated place.
Also, yes, it's far. It's clear across Pennsylvania, right?
It's like basically it's where Pennsylvania and New York like meet the like Lake Erie.
Yes, hence the name Erie, Pennsylvania.
Correct.
Wow.
All right. Well, off topic.
They were awarded. Mercyhurst was awarded the Frozen Four, and the year after that would be at Pegula Ice Arena in University Park, Pennsylvania, hosted by Penn State. So.
I wonder if Lionel will ever get the Frozen Four.
No, I
don't think we have the capacity for it here. No. Quinnipiac Arena is very nice. I've never been there. I tweeted this for those of you who follow me on Twitter. But
what's your Twitter handle?
It's very complicated. It's no, it's DC McDevitt _.
Does someone have DC McDevitt?
Yes, that must be. I would never have added an underscore on purpose. Anyways, I tweeted this, but that was my trip to my 6th ECAC arena, so I've been to half the ECAC arenas.
Let's see, I've been to Cornell, Colgate, Clarkson, RPI,
you've been to all
Union.
The ones I've been to except Quinnipiac.
Have you been to Colgate?
I have not been to
so
Colgate.
So then you've only been to 5, liar.
But I've been to Cornell, RPI, oh, and Harvard.
Oh,
Cornell,
you went to Harvard.
I went to Harvard.
Okay,
Cornell, sure. RPI, Harvard, Harvard, Union, Clarkson, and Quinnipiac. Quinnipiac's nice. It's very... It's
posh.
It's posh. It's
bougie.
It's
bougie.
It's no wine, I'll say that.
I learned in one of my classes that bougie is like bourgeoisie. Like, this was very recently that
you
I figured
did
that
not
out.
Know what? That's what the connection was?
No.
That's why it's
yeah,
bougie.
Now I got that.
Yeah, you never heard of the 18th century hip-hop song Bad and Bourgeoisie? All
right, on that note, let's transition back to the men's side.
I really
things.
Hope that makes the show.
Oh, it'll make the show.
Good.
So let's start talking about what's coming up for the men's
Northeastern Huskies.
Yes. So the despite falling the championship game, Cornell pretty much locked up an NCAA bid. I guess at this point you can make the argument after beating Union, but probably the win over Brown has solidified it for them because losing to a team lower in the pairwise like Brown probably could have knocked them off and knocked them out if some other.
They probably still would have made it, but it would have been close.
And yeah, and you get a little bit, you start to worry a little bit more about what some of the other tournaments are doing, and you know, if a couple teams like Colorado College stole that automatic bid, maybe Cornell wouldn't have gotten in. But so Cornell, what are you doing?
Are you okay?
I'm falling asleep.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
I'm just being difficult. So.
Rafi's in a particularly difficult mood today.
Something's going on with him today, everyone.
Today.
Ouch.
So the Red are headed up to Providence at Dunkin' Donuts.
The
Arena.
Red are?
Red is.
Heading out.
It's not.
What did he say?
North at all?
No, it's not north or south.
The Red is heading east to Providence.
Over to Providence.
Dunkin' Donuts Arena for the East Regional.
What's the route?
Can we talk about the regional, please?
What is the route? I think you'd take 90 and you'd cut down at some point, maybe on.
Oh, I-90. That goes like all the way to St. Louis. It goes, is it Interstate 90?
Yes, Interstate 90, and it goes more than all the way to St. Louis. Yeah. It goes to Seattle.
Okay, well, that's a long-ass highway. I know it is the one you take to St. Louis.
No, 90 doesn't go to St. Louis.
Yes, it does.
No, it doesn't.
I've gotten to St. Louis before.
Well, but you would not take 90 from Minneapolis.
Okay.
You'd take 55.
Anyway, what? 55? I don't...
All right, so there's hockey being played this weekend by Cornell in the NCAA tournament that we should probably talk about.
Interstate Highways podcast.
It'll be Cornell against...
the same number of listeners.
Cornell against Northeastern in the first round this coming Saturday at 4:30 from Dunkin' Donuts Arena in Providence, Rhode Island. The other regional semifinal, will be Minnesota State against...
Providence. In Providence, which some people are very upset about, and I think that's ridiculous.
But they can't stay in their dorms.
Right.
They have to stay in a hotel.
NCAA regulations say that Providence...
Ridiculous that people are upset about it? Or
yeah, I think it's silly to be upset about that.
So even though Providence is the four seed, they will be playing in their basically home rink. Not their actual home rink, but... In their hometown. In their backyard.
Can I just say, what would be the difference if it was the 4-seed Harvard playing there versus, I mean, which still, like, it's Minnesota State. They're not going to have very many home fans in Providence. Like, you're going to have the difference between them and...
The argument is that there are 4 seeds, so they should get put in, like, Allentown or somewhere further away.
Okay, but what would the difference be for Minnesota State to play...
And now they're playing against a team of the home...
But they would be playing that anyways. If it was Harvard, which is another 4 seed, basically the other option to put in Providence, it would still be a Harvard-biased crowd.
Well, not if they were playing...
No, it would just be an empty arena.
Oh, yes, because we don't like Harvard fans here.
Right. No, that wasn't even a dig at Harvard.
But it would still be more Harvard people than Minnesota State people. I mean, it would still be a biased crowd. And Harvard's a better team than Providence, so you're not going to punish Minnesota State because Providence happens to be in Providence.
No, I mean, as far as who gets a tournament, it's subjective. It's all based on the pairwise, but as far as where teams get placed, it is decided by a committee. And, I mean, it makes sense from a logistical standpoint. Why not put a team that's going to make money in a city where it's going to make the most money? And I mean, Providence has, obviously a ton of fans in their home city. So, I don't mind that much. I mean, maybe if they meet in the second round, then it will change. But, a lot of stuff has to happen before we get there. But anyway, it's Cornell and Northeastern in the other semifinal. And it seems as if Cornell will be without starting goalie Matt Galita. Schaefer said on Tuesday he is doubtful to play in this weekend's first round. And I would be surprised if he doesn't play in the first game, if he plays in the second game. But who knows? Maybe if he's well enough, they play him once just to get a two-week break before Frozen Four. So I don't know. I think let's just go around the room saying what we're thinking about this game, if we think Cornell has a shot without Galita, if even McGrath changes anything. What about you, Christina? What do you think?
I think they have a shot against Northeastern. It's a 3-seed Cornell versus 2-seed Northeastern, of course. I mean, I liked what I saw from McGrath earlier in the season when he and Galita were kind of duking it out for the starting position. We knew that it was pretty much Galita's all along, but McGrath did start a fair number of games, and he looked good. Like I said, he was the all-Ivy goaltender.
First team, baby.
I think they have a shot even without Galita, even without Malott. Everyone else is healthy except for Haskinen, obviously. I think there's a good chance.
Dylan, Rafi?
I think they have a chance because I think Galita is obviously a huge part of the team, but I think his absence doesn't diminish their chances hugely because Cornell's system and their defensive strength protects its goaltenders and makes its goaltender look good. So as long as McGrath isn't bad, which I have no reason to believe he will be, I think he's in a good position to succeed, and it's his time to shine. We'll see what he does. It's obviously not an ideal situation with having your backup goaltender having to go in the biggest game of the year, but here we are, and I think Cornell, they're coming off. They've played well in... They've played very well in 5 games in a row.
Yes.
Except, well, 5 playoff games in a row.
I'd say the third game they didn't play very well.
They played very well, good enough to win, very well. I think they played very well in the loss to Clarkson. So their maybe record doesn't look like it. They're kind of on a roll. They're clicking. Special teams have been really good, save for a penalty kill against Clarkson. I haven't looked too in-depth at Northeastern, but I think it's a decent matchup.
It's not like it's getting American International or a team like that. But, as far as actual abilities go, I think it is a relatively positive matchup for Cornell.
Yeah. I'd say it's a pick-em. I'd flip a coin.
Yeah. I mean, Cornell, this is, weirdly enough, this is the third year in a row that Cornell is going up against the Hockey East champion in New England. 2 years ago, UMass Lowell up in Manchester. Last year, BU in Worcester. It's kind of interesting that that's just how things have worked out. Schaefer even said he thought that was kind of weird.
Similar to BU last year, Northeastern's just absolutely on fire. They've won 11 out of 12, something like 7 in a row.
Yeah, so usually you don't bet against the hot teams when it comes to playoffs, but I don't know.
Usually you don't bet on a team without a hot goaltender. But
right.
What I thought was kind of interesting was McGrath today made a point of telling us that he wasn't nervous going into the game, without us asking. So hopefully that's a good sign, or maybe it means he's extra nervous. He doesn't want people.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of the life of a backup goaltender. It's maybe an easy job if you back up a guy like Galita until it's not, and you always have to be ready. It's a unique challenge.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. At times of the year, I was a little skeptical of his play. I mean, it's tough to grade him outside of that one stretch just because, that Yale game when Galita got pulled and McGrath came in, gave up one easy goal and then got pulled again.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. It's hard to tell if that's a product of Galita's superiority or If that's just, you know, obviously when you start a game versus when you get thrown into a game, it's a different mindset. You know, it's kind of like a starting pitcher versus a relief pitcher. It's completely different, you know, completely different approach to the game. And you, especially for goalies, where starting is a more comfortable way to go about it.
Well, yeah, and McGrath has a full week to prepare for this game. He had about 15 seconds to prepare to enter an overtime championship game on Saturday.
Yeah.
So it's apples and oranges.
I mean, he basically saw Goliath come to the bench to take himself out of the game and did a little visualization and quick moves just to warm up. But, you know, I mean, he barely broke a sweat by the time that Clarkson scored the game winner. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, you know, looking at Northeastern, you know, obviously, like you said, a red-hot team. Luckily for Cornell, they were without Adam Gaudette, who was the Hobie Baker winner from last year. Spent 3 years at Northeastern before turning pro with the Vancouver Canucks organization. But still, you know, a very formidable team, hockey's champs. I don't know, have any of you guys done any sort of a scouting report on Northeastern to know what kind of they bring to the table this weekend?
Well, they've got a really good goaltender. Caden Primo has been really solid for them. He has he allows 2.0 goals per game. He's a Montreal Canadiens draft pick. Second in the country in save percentage. He's one of the elite netminders. But Cornell just went up against a guy, Jake Kiley, who's also one of the best goaltenders in the league. So that's probably good preparation in there. Cornell's used to running into hot goaltenders. You never know what'll happen in one game. And then there's an interesting note I found in Cornell's game notes this week. You know, one of the storylines for Cornell this season has been how great they've been in the first period, you know, getting out to early leads. Northeastern, conversely, is tied for second in the country in third period scoring. Mm. They're outscoring its opposition 51-28 in third periods throughout the season.
Well, Cornell's also not bad in the third period. They're just really bad in the second period.
Yeah, well, and they've just been terrific.
We've talked about that before,
in the first period and like the first even 2 or 3 minutes of the game. I think Cornell has something like 7 goals this season in the first 2 minutes of games.
Yeah, I think that's that lead the
leads
country.
The country, yeah.
Yeah, and Schaefer was telling us today just about looking at their roster. Jeremy Davis at defense. He's kind of been talking to the team about. I mean, obviously, you know, it's easier to a little bit easier to prepare for ECAC team just because you see them twice in the year. You're pretty much familiar with who they are year to year. But Jeremy Davis at Northeastern, he's trying to give guys a comparison. He compared him to Chase Prisky or an Adam Fox. Which is, you know, very high praise for any player. But yeah, I don't know. I think just as far as mentally going into this game, Cornell's learned from these past 2 years going up against Boston, BU, and UMass Lowell. I think they've, you know, not the complacency was much of an issue, but you know, 2 years ago Schaefer said on Tuesday that they kind of were scared of UMass. Last year, they played BU a little bit more to how they wanted to play.
You can't call them UMass.
UMass Lowell. Last year, they played them a little bit, BU a little bit more how they should have played. And this year, he's kind of hoping that they'll kind of keep that going, that trend improving a little bit. And, you know, it is the third year that Cornell is going to the third straight year Cornell's going to the Frozen or the NCAA tournament. First time ever under Schaefer's tenure.
It's just very, very impressive to get to the NCAA tournament. It's not easy to do once, let alone 3 times in a row. It's a testament to how good a place the program is in.
In the field? How many other teams in the field? This is their third consecutive tournament.
It can't be
very many.
I think it might just be Denver.
Not St. Cloud.
Brian was telling us today that only 3 years, what teams have been in the top 11 pairwise the last 3 years, and I think it was just...
The top 11, yeah. I wonder about top 16.
There might have been a couple other teams trickling, but Denver and Cornell are only 2 teams I know of. Which is pretty good.
Impressive.
I mean, Denver, they won a national championship in that time span.
Well, and the fun and frustrating thing about the NCAA tournament is it's one and done. Hockey's a weird game to begin with. It's really such a crapshoot. So once you're there, it's either frustrating or wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, how...
depending on results.
The last... I don't have the numbers in front of me, but, I mean... A 4 seed beats a 1 seed probably
every year,
if not multiple times a year. There have been national champion 4 seeds as recently as a couple of years ago, so it really is kind of a crapshoot, like you said. One thing I knew, though, we were talking about the goaltenders earlier, and I pulled this stat up earlier. Matt Goliath had a quietly very, very good season. His goals against average was 1.85, which is really, really impressive, and I don't think we quite touched upon it maybe enough just because of how well he played last year and with the kind of a slow start he got out to.
Yeah, it was a slow start and injury and expectations so sky high.
When you consider the slow start and the injuries, for him to eventually get back to a goals against average well under two, I think is really impressive, and he deserves some credit for it, as it seems as though his season may be ending, possibly. So just wanted to mention that. And also, I don't know if you guys touched on it, but McGrath's numbers this year, 2.15 goals against average, 0.919 save percentage. So, you know, nothing to scoff at either.
It's even, it would be, you know, I was changing our line sheets the other day, updating the stats, and much higher. You know, just one goal. I think he saw two or three shots maybe that in the overtime.
Yeah, well,
it's the
minutes played that really kills him. So getting
yes, but yeah, but
getting one goal in the 3 minutes played is terrible for your goals against average. That
right.
Would yeah, that would hurt.
And
it.
One and save percentage one doesn't get affected as much, but still.
Right.
But yeah, no, he's definitely proven himself. You know, to be a formidable backup. I don't really know, you know, what more how this season could have prepared him much better for this kind of moment.
Yeah, he was great in that road win at Harvard that right before the winter break. There was really a turning point in the season.
Schaefer even brought it up today.
Right.
Yeah. Once again.
Should we take some listener questions?
Yeah, let's take some listener questions.
I got one via email. Should we start with this one?
Sure.
This is from Jan Cornelius 84. Jan, thanks for your question. let's scroll down here. Well, first of all, thank you very much for your nice email. And the question here is about Morgan Barron, wondering if he's going to be back next year, if he's going pro after the season. Jan says, I still regret Anthony Angelo's leaving. Guys, your thoughts on if Barron's going to be back?
I'd be very surprised if Barron leaves this offseason.
Be surprised if he leaves?
I'd be surprised if he leaves. I think next year's a different story. You know, I think having a sophomore leaving is not unheard of, but uncommon, certainly. I think, you know, obviously, for those who don't know, Barron is the team's leading scorer, 30-something, I want to say 33 points.
Exactly 33, not bad.
Wow.
Did you do that without looking?
I did do it without looking. So, obviously, tremendous talent, New York Rangers draft pick. My guess, this is just a guess, I don't think he's NHL ready quite yet. If he were to leave now, he'd probably have to spend a good amount of time in the AHL. I think college, one more year of college might get him developmentally to a point where he might be ready to go straight through to the NHL. He is a tremendous talent. Watching him play is an absolute pleasure, I must say. Mm. But I don't think he'll leave because I think he would have to spend another season in the AHL anyways before getting to the NHL. And I think probably developmentally, he's got a talented team around him. He's got a great line of two of his classmates that really help contribute to his production. So not out of the question, but I think for him it makes for a lot of guys it just doesn't make sense to stay another year in college. And that was the case with Angelo. It was the last year the Penguins had his rights.
Has he been doing anything in the AHL?
He's been playing competently and regularly. But for him, it was basically that was his last chance to get a contract from the Penguins. It was the last year they owned his rights. It was kind of now or never, and for him.
Well, he still could, if anything.
Yeah, but it
he had more options if he stayed.
Right, but
he would become a free agent.
Yeah, but he would have to spend his senior year in college, and he doesn't get any more, I think, developmentally out of that. I don't think in Angelo's case that another year of college would have made him NHL ready. He would have had to slide into the AHL afterwards, anyways. And it didn't really make a lot of sense for him to stay, I don't think. And I think guys understand that. That's why he left. I think in Barron's case, he's younger. I believe he was a true freshman last year, as in like 18 years old. I think he's only 19 or 20.
Yeah, Barron?
Yeah. So, I mean, he's it's not like he's one of these guys that came in here at age 20 or 21 as a freshman. Barron is, you know, one of the younger guys on the team. And I think developmentally he gets... You know, he gets more out of staying in college another year as opposed to ditching early.
Yeah, this is something people don't talk about a lot either is the Cornell education, which I think I don't know Morgan well enough to say this with certainty, but I sense that finishing his degree is something he cares about.
I think most guys care about it.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at the guys last year.
I mean, if you think about it, he could go to a he could have played college hockey at some fancy place with a big scholarship and, you know, a fancier arena and easier schoolwork, and he chose Cornell.
Right, and to pay full price because they don't give athletic scholarships.
Yeah, I think when it comes to Morgan, it's going to be a little bit more based on whatever the Rangers want of him. And, you know, we've seen some reports out there saying that the Rangers do have interest in maybe getting him signed after this year, although it hasn't been much and it hasn't been too in-depthly reported. You know, I think you see a lot of cases. I think you see a lot of cases, and sometimes I don't even know if it is a case. But if he does have an offer on the table, it would probably be smart for him to take it, just because you don't know what's going to happen next year. You don't know, maybe what happened to Jeff Malan happens to him, where he tears an ACL and is out for, 8 months or something and misses almost an entire season, and then has another season and he has not really back to where he used to be, or, God forbid, see something as career ending, or, I think it's a big gamble to have that offer and not accept it and kind of make a bet on yourself. It's not unheard of. You've seen it happen with some players. But, I think when it comes to whether he stays or goes, I think it's more dependent on whatever the Rangers are going to offer him, if anything at all. But, I think he could benefit from another year. I don't think he's quite NHL ready, but the Rangers aren't a good team now, so maybe they want to get some young guys NHL experience.
I mean, for who knows, who knows if the Rangers even want him to come now.
Yeah,
I mean, they might say, listen, we don't really feel like paying you money to go sit in the AHL when you can get probably the same development value out of playing in college. Who knows? It's hard to speculate.
Yeah. It's
pointless, but also kind of interesting to think, where would the team be if Angelo had stayed this season?
Yeah, where would Angelo be, or where would the team be if Angelo was there, or would they be?
Same exact place. I mean, he's a good.
Really?
Angelo's a great player. I don't think a scorer like Angelo is the difference between where this team is right now and maybe winning the ECAC championship.
They lost not just scoring, but like a physical presence, especially now with Malott being down, senior leadership. I mean, there's some stuff that's just a little invaluable. I think they would at least, it's hard to say, but probably won that Cleary outright. And, who knows what would happen in the ECAC tournament. But also, everything could have changed if he was in the mix. Let's get into maybe one more listener question. I think we have one from a friend of the show, someone very special to one of our hearts. Maybe special to all of our hearts in our own unique way. Christina, I believe your father has a question.
My father wants to know whether the ECAC or Hockey East is a stronger conference.
This year or like ever?
So
not specified.
So let's answer both. So this year, pretty clearly, it's got to be ECAC. Maybe if the talent on up to down in the Hockey East is a little bit stronger. I mean, the ECAC has four tournament teams this year, and Hockey East only has three.
UMass, Northeastern,
and Providence. Just based on those numbers alone, ECAC has four tournament teams compared to three, and if you were to extend the tournament to 20 teams, then the ECAC would have five, and Hockey East would still have three. So I think on that number alone, it's pretty clear that this year is at least an up year for the ECAC, and I think the ECAC is trending upwards as a whole. I know Dylan has a little bit different feelings about it on the historical perspective, which I probably agree with.
So historical perspective, I did look it up before the show. So for those of our listeners who aren't aware of this, in 1984, several schools left the ECAC to form what is Hockey East. Since the split, Hockey East has won 8 national championships and the ECAC has won just 4.
But all of those national championships are probably 2 or 3.
BC and BU are obviously 2 powerhouses. Maine has won a couple. Providence won one.
Okay.
Whereas the ECAC has had 4 different teams win exactly once since the split. Harvard, RPI won the year after the split. Harvard won in 89. Yale won in 2013 and Union in 2014.
Now that it was 4 different teams is maybe an argument that the ECAC is better.
In terms of parity, maybe.
There are a lot of good teams. And even a team, look at this season, a team like Yale or Brown, you know, not in the NCAA tournament, not a stellar team, but one that's tough to beat every weekend in conference play. Which isn't to say that the Hockey East doesn't have teams like that. But.
Yeah, I mean, you have like some of the blue bloods still in Hockey East who just are in some bad swings. I mean, you know, last time the Frozen Four was in Buffalo, it was Cornell and New Hampshire in one of the semifinals. You know, even Vermont has had its time on top. You know, BU last year was in the tournament. BC too. Well, they weren't in the tournament last year, but they're still, you know, considered one of the most historic and successful programs in college hockey history. So I don't know, the pedigree in the Hockey East is probably historically a bit of a tear up, but I don't think it means that, you know, the overall gap historically between ECAC and Hockey East is so large. I mean, the last 10 years you've seen several ECAC teams win. You saw Yale and Union both win a national championship in the last 10 years.
And in that Yale championship, they were up against Quinnipiac.
Yeah, so that's two right there. That's, you kind of have to chalk that up to two teams maybe winning a title that year or some variety. I think we should just let this weekend's winner of Cornell Northeastern just decide.
Yeah, perhaps this can be the tiebreaker, if you will, between the two.
So whatever happens this weekend between Cornell and Northeastern is now just considered the defining and final answer in this debate.
Harvard versus UMass doesn't get any love?
No.
All right, so now we're hoping that Cornell beats Northeastern, Providence beats Minnesota State, Harvard and whatever, and then Cornell-Providence will be the third deciding game.
Okay.
If that makes any sense. Well, no matter what happens this coming weekend, we'll be sure to fill your podcast listening ears sometime in the near future.
And before the weekend starts, we'll have all sorts of good content on CornellSun.com, previewing the matchup, little scouting report, what they're saying here in Ithaca about the matchup. So plenty of light reading for you ahead of this weekend's NCAA heavy tournament.
We'll be in touch with you all when our podcast will next be on the air, because it is obviously spring break coming up. We're not sure when we might be able to meet up again and record this lovely podcast for all you lovely people.
This could be our last one, couldn't it?
I know, we should do one more.
Wouldn't that be sad?
Maybe, you're discounting them from making the Frozen Four?
I am. But, no, it could happen. Yeah, they could go to the Frozen Four.
We wouldn't do a wrap-up one if they did.
Okay, so no matter what, we're doing one more.
Don't worry.
I don't have to prepare my heartfelt farewell speech.
If you were already, having a heart attack, you can subside it right now, because we're coming back, baby.
Come on, Stanley, don't have a heart attack.
Okay, now you lost
it. I don't know what that is.
Right.
Anyway, we will be sure to catch you back.
It's a fire drill episode of The Office.
That was such a specific. And I know what you're talking about, but that was really specific. Anyway, no matter what happens next week, we'll be sure to talk about it eventually with you on the Good Evening Hockey Fans podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Zach Silver, at C Bulkley Sun, at Rafi _Gendler, at DC McDevitt _, and at Daily Sun Sports is where you can find coverage this coming weekend. We'll catch you back next week. Good evening, hockey fans.